Yelston, we have a podcast.
Diving deep into all things Texas, both on and off the field. Here's Sean Pendergast. Welcome to Utopia.
Hey, everybody, welcome in. It is a Friday. I'm recording this on Thursday. You're probably listening on Friday because this baby drops Friday morning usually, but it is a six-pack preview edition of the Utopia Football Podcast. My name is Sean Pendergast, one half of Payne and Pendergast on Sports Radio 610 mornings, 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. weekdays on Houston's sports leader, the perennial sports leader, who I believe is right around the 30th anniversary of becoming an all-sports station, KILT AM, Sports Radio 610. So appreciate all of you tuning into the podcast. Hopefully you enjoyed the mailbag episode earlier this week. If you want to get an email into the mailbag episode, you can do that. We do it every Tuesday, and that is houmailbag@gmail.com. Again, the only rules for the mailbag, and this is how you know that the podcast is doing well, is that I'm getting enough emails now where I've got to have rules. Keep the emails tight. Keep them short. Keep them to the point. Appreciate that. Also, best to email. If you're going to email, I wouldn't send any emails about leading into the Patriots game. The mailbag's going to run on Tuesday after the Patriots game. So anything having to do with the Patriots game Sunday, send it in after the game. If you have a general question, just a general Texans topic that evergreens just fine without the result of the Patriots game mattering, things like Nico Collins' injury, like that's going to be a thing for the next several weeks, feel free to email right now if you want to. But the email address is houmailbag@gmail.com. Always giving you that reminder to subscribe to the podcast if you haven't already. If you're listening now and you haven't clicked the subscribe button, it would be great if you did so. All it takes is just a push of a button, and then you don't have to worry about finding the podcast or someone forwarding it to you. You get it automatically sent to whatever device it is you consume your podcast. Appreciate everybody who's involved with the growth of the podcast, and let's get it going. We've got the Patriots and the Texans on Sunday, noon kick. Texans countdown begins at 9 a.m. That would be me and Seth Payne. Kickoff is at noon, Sports Radio 610, 100.3 The Bull. And then the postgame with me and Clint Sterner taking you up to Sunday Night Football, which you can hear on Sports Radio 610. We'll get to the six-pack in a moment, but I think just this is a significant kind of flip-flop, you know, kind of a bizarro version of what we've been used to between the Patriots and the Texans. And this isn't anything that's been necessarily sudden. The Texans have been a good team now for, you know, a year and change. The Patriots have been kind of lagging really since Tom Brady left. They had the one playoff appearance where they got destroyed with Mac Jones. Really, this is a franchise that's been kind of in decay since Brady left. And now in the last year, Belichick last year, and now whatever it is they are this year, I'm sure the Texans are not taking them lightly. That doesn't mean that we on this podcast or around town can't take them lightly. We're not out there playing. But the fact of the matter is, this is a Texans team that is significantly better than the Patriots, but the Texans have shown over the last year and a half that despite being good, it doesn't matter how shitty a team is, they can let a team hang around in a game. And if we take last year's Jets, and especially that Panthers game, as any sort of blueprint, they will let a shitty team beat them. They haven't yet this year. The only loss this year is to the Vikings, but they've let a couple teams kind of hang close in games. I mean, Jacksonville ain't all that, and they hung around with the Texans. Maybe should have beat the Texans. The Bears are 3-2, but it's a very shaky 3-2. And the Colts are they're not a mess, but they're not a threat right now. So the Texans have played close games with all of those teams. So I don't want to act like there's no chance that the Patriots can win this thing or hang around. They absolutely can, if the Texans allow them to hang around. It's up to the Texans as to whether or not the Patriots hang around. It's not up to the Patriots. It's up to the Texans as to whether or not this thing is close. The Texans are a 7-point favorite. They've never been a favorite before up in New England. They've played in New England 7 times. If you're looking for a little history lesson, they've played there 7 times. They have won exactly. Close your eyes. What do you see? Nothing. Zero. That's how often the Texans have won in Gillette Stadium. They've never won there. And not only that, they've gone up there and got their asses kicked in historic fashion at times. The Letterman jacket game back in December of 2012. I was there for that one in 2012. That was a 28-point ass kicking. Two playoff games up there, both not really close. They lost by 13 at the end of the 2012 season. They lost by 18 in the Brock Osweiler season. The Texans lose by an average of 18 points at Gillette Stadium. Again, they've never been favored there. They're favored by a touchdown this season. And this game has some major, major storylines to it that we'll get into in the six pack. But this, again, if the Texans take care of their business, this will be the first time in the history of the franchise that they'll have won a game in New England. They're 3-9 lifetime against the Patriots. The three wins, can you name them? The three wins, final game of 2009. That was a game where Wes Welker tore up his knees on that janky-ass turf that NRG Stadium used to have. 2019, that was the flu game where half the Patriots had the flu. And a player by the name of Deshaun Watson and DeAndre Hopkins combined on a nifty little trick play to kind of give the Texans their biggest lead in that game. That was a game that was, the Texans really kind of blew out the Patriots in that game, but the Patriots scored a couple late touchdowns to make it close. And then the other time, people forget about this one because it was the COVID season and the Texans didn't win much in the COVID season, but one of their four wins over the Patriots at NRG Stadium with Cam Newton as the Patriots quarterback. So there's your history lesson with the Patriots. I say all that and lay all that out to say these are two extremely different franchises than what they've been historically going against each other. The Patriots have been the greatest team of this century for the most part, other than the last few years. And the Texans have been a team that has, to say the least, been very up and down throughout their two-decade history. So with that all laid out there, let's dig in on the six-pack. Where are my graphics here? Where did you go? There you are, six-pack. If you're watching on YouTube, you know what it is I'm talking about. So pregame six-pack right there at the bottom of the screen. As I take my sip of bubbly to get this bad boy going. Six storylines, people, things that will impact this game. And the sixth one is always my prediction for the game. So let's get it started here with the pregame six-pack. Can number one. No Nico, now what? Nico Collins went to injured reserve. I've not done a podcast episode since Nico Collins went to injured reserve. So I'll give you my thoughts on that briefly, and then what does that mean for this game against the Patriots on Sunday? My hope, and I'm very much reading into what D'Amico Ryans had to say in his press conference Wednesday. It seemed like this was the case. D'Amico was noncommittal, as he should be, about when Nico would be back. The fact that he knows Nico is coming back, because he did say that, Nico will be back this season. That tells me that the severity on this thing is skewing towards the lower end of severity. If there was any sort of question as to whether or not he could come back, D'Amico would say that, I think. So that he's definitely coming back tells me it's on the lower end of the severity. That D'Amico kind of positioned it as, hey, let's let Nico get healthy and, you know, kind of let's make sure he's healthy. So let's put him on IR so he can focus on getting healthy. Tells me that it's more of a situation of, hey, it's a long season. We got Stephon Diggs for a reason, which I'll get to in a second. Because I think this is one of the reasons they got Diggs. And let's make sure Nico is ready for what is going to be really, to me, the tipping point in this schedule, that Detroit, Dallas, followed by two division games before the bye week. That's a really crucial four game. I know that Detroit and Dallas games are both NFC games, so empirically they don't mean as much. But I think just in terms of measuring stick, especially against Detroit on Sunday night, and that's a home game too, you know, you're missing Nico in this game this weekend. That shouldn't matter. You're missing him at Green Bay. That will matter. You're missing it at home for the Colts. You should still win that game against the Colts at home, even without Nico, even though that's the equivalent. Indianapolis has got to be one of the happiest cities on earth that Nico is out because he was their T.Y. Hilton. This would be like the Texans back in the day finding out T.Y. Hilton couldn't play. We would be, I mean, we'd call off school that day to celebrate. And then the other game he'll miss is the Thursday night game against the Jets, who are just a dumpster fire right now. They're a swirling pile of poop going down the toilet right now with their coaching changes and whatnot. And Aaron Rodgers looking like, I resent anybody who says I was part of Robert getting fired. So I think you can navigate those four games without Nico. I think you'd still go 3-1 in those games without Nico Collins. Really, I mean, honestly, I think you go 4-0 without him in those games. But I think they go 3-1 in those four games. You're talking about a team that's 7-2 to start the season, heading into the back end, and the second half of the season is a whole lot harder than the first half. So I said 6-2 through eight games. I would certainly take 7-2 through nine games, obviously. So I do think a big reason they went and got Stephon Diggs this offseason was because of stuff like this. Tank getting his leg broken. Tank's already missed the game because of a chest slash rib injury. Nico is injury prone. That's not even shade. That's not me being disgusted with it or anything. Nico's a fantastic player and a great person. He is good for missing at least a few games a year because of injury. Stephon Diggs is a rock. That dude does not miss time. I think a big reason they got Diggs was because of the shaky medicals with Tank Dell and Nico Collins. And you know what? Good for them, because it's ensured that in a game where Tank Dell misses, they've still got Nico and Steph. It ensures in a period of a month where you're missing Nico Collins that you've still got Stephon Diggs and Tank Dell. I would submit that even without Nico, the combination of Tank, Stephon Diggs, Dalton Schultz, and Joe Mixon, who we'll get to in just a second. He practiced today. I was at practice today. Joe Mixon was out there practicing. Limited, I believe, but he was practicing. He was in uniform doing drills. That combination of four, to me, is as good as any combination of skill guys that they've had in the history of this team. I would put it up against any of them. Tank, Steph, Dalton Schultz, and Joe Mixon. I think the one group that maybe is that you could argue is better would be the height of the Kubiak era with Andre Johnson, Owen Daniels, Arian Foster, and Kevin Walter. You know, there's, you know, we can compare and say, okay, this guy compared to that guy individually. I'm saying as a group of four. The point being, this is still a really good group of skill guys that they have, even without Nico Collins. It's up to Bobby Slowick to figure out how to deploy it. So that's can number one, the Nico effect being out. They didn't look good offensively against Buffalo once Nico went out. My hope is that a week worth of game planning without Nico, installing some things that are maybe friendly to a non-Nico offense, as opposed to, I'm sure they went into that Buffalo game not planning for Nico Collins to leave with a hamstring. So hopefully Bobby Slowick has some things dialed up for this game against the Patriots. Again, it's the Patriots. Like, you should, this Nico thing should be a non-issue for a week at least. So that is can number one, which is a direct lead into can number two of the six pack, which is Joe Mixon. He practiced today. He talked to the media in the locker room afterwards. I saw a video that Aaron Wilson put up where Joe Mixon said he felt good. It was good to be back out there. He was non-committal about playing this weekend. It sounds like they're going to give it a go on Friday. We should point out Joe Mixon practiced 2 weeks ago before the Jacksonville game on Friday and didn't play in that game. Then last week didn't practice nor play. And didn't practice yesterday, Wednesday, does practice Thursday. So hopefully, it sounds like he's going to practice again tomorrow. Does he play on Sunday? We'll see. I could definitely see the team, not outwardly saying this, but I could see the team assessing the situation and saying, you know what, it's probably best we make sure Joe is 100% for Green Bay, even though it's an NFC team, not an AFC team. But that's empirically, that's just a harder game to win than this New England. They should be able to beat New England, again, without Nico Collins and without Joe Mixon. They should be able to beat the New England Patriots. So do you take that risk and sit Joe Mixon while you know Nico's going to be sitting? Again, this is where the defense comes in, you know, because that defense is suffocating right now for the Texans. They drove Josh Allen crazy, and I think they'll do the same thing to Drake May. As you can imagine, we have a can for Drake May in the six-pack a little later on. But the ability to run the football, whether it's Mixon or whether it's Cam Akers, Damian Pierce is back at practice. It's the Damian Pierce thing is really weird because he had three carries in the Colts game where he looked okay. And yet he hasn't played other than that this year. And I see great enthusiasm for Damian Pierce coming back. And I'm sitting here going, okay, what exactly has Damian done since we all wanted him run out of town during training camp because he looked like he didn't really make any progress in the offseason? So I'm hopeful. I love Damian Pierce. I would love nothing more than for Damian Pierce to become a crucial part of this offense again, to where you miss him when he's gone. That's what he was like as a rookie. And he's just such a great guy. I don't know that getting Dameon Pierce back and not having Joe Mixon makes any sort of difference. You know, to me, Joe Mixon is the difference maker in all this. And as much as I love Dari Gumbawale, I don't need to see him carrying the ball 15 times again. I don't need to see that. I know that he's very consistent and he's reliable and he's versatile and all of these things. He also carried the ball 15 times for 30 yards. I don't need to see that again. And I know some of that's on the offensive line. I get that. But Joe Mixon is a guy who probably takes those 15 carries and doubles that yardage just based on his ability to break tackles, the wiggle that he has, the vision that he has, et cetera. So running the football will be very, very key to making sure this thing isn't a game. Joe Mixon coming back would be out fucking standing. Number three, please, no silly stuff. This I firmly believe. If the Texans don't make any stupid special teams mistakes like they did in the Colts game in week one and the Jacksonville game in week four, if they don't go out and get 12 penalties like they did on average for a three-game stretch there, weeks two through four, if they protect the football, no dumb turnovers like we had in the fourth quarter this past Sunday against Buffalo, they will win this game going away. And those are all things that's not a huge ask. I'm not saying don't get any penalties. I'm saying don't get 12, right? Six penalties, fine. I'd prefer maybe spread them out over the course of the game as opposed to getting them all in one quarter like they did against Buffalo last week. They had no penalties in the first half. They're up 17-3. They had six penalties in the third quarter, and all of a sudden the game's 20-17 going into the fourth. That's not a coincidence. So no silly stuff. Like, that's the only thing that can lose the game for you is if you allow New England to hang around in this thing. New England is not going to – they don't have anywhere near the weaponry to force the issue and stay in this game by driving 10 or 12 plays for 80 yards. They don't have that in them. But if you give them some short fields, if you have breakdowns, busts in the return game that allow them to flip field position, if you make mistakes, block punts, muff punts in your own territory, if you turn the ball over in your own territory, CJ's done that a few times in recent weeks, the very beginning of the Vikings game, the fourth quarter of the Bills game last week. If you give them short fields, that's what's going to allow them to stay in the game. This team does not have 11 play drives in them. They just don't. So don't do any stupid shit. That's my biggest request out of everything. I think the one thing you can count on is if you don't do anything dumb, if you just, when it's fourth and long, you're punting, you're not getting punts blocked. You know, you're not making stupid turnovers. You'll win this game. It may be ugly. You might win it 16-6, but you'll win this game. You just have way too much talent to lose this game unless you gift them things. All right, so that's number three, no silly stuff. Number four, kill the rookie. Drake May is making his first start. You have to make him hate football by the end of this game. He seems like a happy-go-lucky kid who really loves the sport of football. And you know what? When he wakes up on Monday or Tuesday, probably Tuesday or Wednesday, it's fine for him to love the sport again. He needs to wake up Monday morning feeling like he should be in traction. They need to smother this kid. They need to do to him and then some what they did to Caleb Williams in week two, where they just blitzed the hell out of him, beat the hell out of him, sacked him seven times, and sent him home practically in a body bag. The thing I would say about this is that Drake May doesn't have nearly the weaponry that Caleb Williams does. Caleb Williams had DJ Moore in that game. He's got a good tight end in Cole Kmet. Roma Dunze played in that game. I don't think Keenan Allen played in the game, if I'm recalling correctly. Drake May's got none of that. His receivers are garbage. Hunter Henry is probably his most noteworthy target in the passing game. They talk about they talk about Drake May's weaponry around him and Ramondre Stevenson. They make him sound like he's LaDainian Tomlinson or something. He's fine. He's okay. He's way better than anybody else they've got, and that's kind of where he benefits from comparison. This is a bad offense with a rookie who's going to be in over his head making his first start. The big thing you can't allow is for Drake May to let his legs keep drives alive, extend drives, convert third downs with scrambles. It's going to happen. He's an athletic kid. You can't let it happen a multitude of times. You can't allow him to do what Anthony Richardson did in week one. Anthony Richardson had 50-something yards rushing in week one because he had no discipline in keeping him in the pocket. He's just really, really good. Josh Allen had a few nice runs last week as well. You can't allow that. That's what's going to keep them in the game, is the Texans making mistakes if they do, and Drake May hurting you with his legs. Drake May throws the ball 35 times in this game. I can assure you, without even looking at the box score, the Patriots lost this game. Because you're leaning on him too much, or you're behind by a bunch and they're throwing to try to come back in this game. I think if Drake May throws the ball more than like 32 times in this game, I'll blindly say the Texans win the game, because that means way too much has been put on his plate. It means you've probably put him in bad down and distance situations. So you have got to crush his soul, Drake May. All right. So that's number four. Number five is really just more kind of a fun thing for me. Nick Caserio returning to New England. I know they went back there for a preseason game last year. Belichick was still there. This is different. This is the regular season. It's just wild to think that the Texans team that Nick Caserio inherited, there were probably a lot of people up in New England when he took that Texans job saying, what are you doing? What are you thinking? Why are you going there? They've got no draft picks. They've got a salary cap that's jacked for the next 2 years. No free agents want to go there. Ownership was under a serious microscope for just being completely incompetent at that point. Obviously, that's flipped on its head now. Cal and Hannah have done a tremendous job the last couple of years with the decisions that they've made and the people they've been able to get into the building over there. And I think just the PR stuff too. I think they've been amazing. They're so popular now. So I think it's interesting, and I would love to crawl inside Nick's brain and just know kind of how he's processing going back up to New England with a team that is among the best in the NFL that he built. You know, I obviously with some help, and particularly the last couple of years with D'Amico adding his eyes and his thoughts to this. You know, there are a lot of D'Amico's fingerprints are on the decisions that get made. And Nick himself says he works on behalf of D'Amico. D'Amico tells him what he wants and he goes and gets it. But you can't say enough about what Nick's done with the Deshaun Watson trade, the assets that they've got from that, and then what they've used, what they've gotten from those draft picks, what they've used those draft picks on the players. So I think that's cool, man. I think it's cool that Nick gets to go back to where he spent two decades and say, hey, man, look at this team that I made. I think there's a big part of him that would like the Texans to beat up on the Patriots 34-0 and send the message like, yeah, I made the right decision to go to Houston. Because who knows? He might be the GM of the Patriots right now if he had stayed up there. But what a great spot he's in now, and he's got a lot to do with that. So I'm happy for him. Can number five in the six-pack, 27-13, Texans. That's my prediction on this game. 27-13. I don't think it's going to be a spectacular game offensively for the Texans. I think it'll be a workmanlike game. If Joe Mixon plays, then I reserve the right to maybe tack a few more points, maybe make it 30-13, something like that. But as of right now, I'm 50-50 on Mixon playing. I'm 50-50 on even whether I want him to play in this game. Like, if there's any sort of shakiness with the ankle, sit one more week. Let Damian Pierce and Cam Akers and Dari Gumbawale handle things. But 27-13 is my prediction. I think the Texans will play a relatively clean game. I just think this is a Patriots team that's the equivalent of someone who's had their arms chopped off, basically. They're not equipped, I think, to handle, particularly offensively, handle what the Texans defense is going to throw at Drake May. I might be overshooting it with 13. So 27-13 is my prediction. That would mean that the Texans would be covering the spread for 2 weeks in a row. That would be big. The total on this game is 37.5. So people are not expecting a high scoring game. So we're right around that number with that prediction. So there you go. All right. A reminder again, subscribe to the podcast, hit that subscribe button, give us a rating, give us a review. We'd love that. And the mailbag, houmailbag@gmail.com, is where you can send us an email. Big thanks once again to all of you for listening. Everybody who shares and passes the podcast along to people, really, really appreciate that. I wish I could thank all of you in person for doing that. Maybe someday I will. I'm easy to find if you're looking for me at any given point. I live in Upper Kirby, and at any given point, you can find me downstairs at Bex Prime next to my building, at Lizards 2 blocks from here, sometimes at the original Carrabba's, eating sushi at Aka. That's all around here. If I get in a car and go anywhere, Taquerias Randas. I love going there. The one by the stadium, the one in the Heights. So any of those places, you can probably find me. I would be, if I were crossways with the mob, I would be a very easy person to whack. I have routines. I'm a very routine driven person, and there's a good chance like 85% of my day is kind of the same in terms of where I am. And I can tell you whatever it is I'm doing is not anything that's really conducive to defending myself. If anything, I'd be like, yep, I get it. Just let me keep my eyes. Okay. Just you shoot me like right here. You know, just let me keep my eyes. Like Big Pussy said in The Sopranos. All right. So I'm on a tangent now. I'm rambling. Let's get going here and let's get a win on Sunday, Texans. How about it? Big thanks to all you guys. Really appreciate you. Have a great weekend. We will see you 9 a.m. Sunday for Texans Countdown on Sports Radio 610. We'll see you on Friday morning. If you're listening to this, we got you covered all day long on Football Friday on Sports Radio 610 as well. Have a great weekend, everybody.